Spirit Blade Underground, episode 401. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 401.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at christiangeekcentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and like me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out spiritblade.com. I was a little mentally checked out there, I'm going to admit that, because I'm trying to figure out if my mic settings are right. Hang on a second. Take some effort to bend down there and adjust that slider. All right, on the show today, a review of 10 Cloverfield Lane and some thoughts about the single-player potential for Tom Clancy's The Division on PS4, which I checked out this week. Here we go. Let's get to it. Well, thank you all for joining me on this historic day. The serum I've created will give anyone who drinks it the power to objectively know the difference between something that is cool and something that is lame. The serum is available to anyone who provides a review for the Spirit Blade Underground podcast and is completely safe. Allow me to demonstrate. This is my uncut review of 10 Cloverfield Lane. Now, the synopsis on IMDb reads, after getting in a car accident, a woman is held in a shelter by two men who claim the outside world is affected by a widespread chemical attack. Normally, I read a little bit more of the IMDb synopsis. I actually wanted to just leave it at that. In fact, that much of the setup of the plot wasn't clear to me from watching the teasers, so I kind of hesitate to say too much about the story. I don't want to spoil anything. There might be just some minor spoilers in this as far as like what kind of movie it is, but as far as the plot itself, I think you're safe. Anyway, let's talk about the story, the script, the pacing, because really the promotional materials that I've seen have, even the full-length trailers, have looked more like teasers, and have kept me wondering, like, what kind of movie is this, you know? It's supposed to be some kind of like a spin-off or cousin to the movie Cloverfield, which was a found footage giant monster movie that came out a number of years ago. And it's really interesting because I didn't think that movie was like this huge runaway success that, you know, such that they would want to, you know, use it as a springboard for a movie that is so different from it, and so loosely tied, except in mostly just the name. It's not the same kind of movie. It's not found footage at all. And it's not about giant monsters in the same way that Cloverfield was. This is a super light sci-fi setting, with the exception of roughly a 5 to 10 minute sequence. And I won't tell you where that happens in the movie. That might be a minor spoiler to admit the existence of sci-fi elements, but I think so is the title. And if you don't know, if you go into this movie not knowing that there are any sci-fi elements at all, I think that when they appear, it might be so out of left field. Like, if my parents went to see this, and they were just kind of expecting, like, this kind of intense drama about people cooped up in the same spot and, you know, wondering who's dangerous or not or whatever, you know, I think when the sci-fi elements came in, they'd be like, what the crap? I mean, my parents don't say what the crap, that's my thing, but I mean, I think they would have been like, oh no, this is weird, you know, something like that. But when you go in and you're expecting some kind of sci-fi element, I think that some people, myself included, may be a little bit disappointed by how little sci-fi there actually is and how much this is really a forced isolation with people who might be crazy drama, you know? And you've seen some of these movies before. It feels like an indie movie in a number of respects. In fact, the idea of a, there's an apocalypse and so we're cooped up in this shelter together, I've seen that a number of times in different, you know, sci-fi movies, a lot of them indie movies. And a lot of those, I think, were done better, that were more interesting than this one. I would be willing to bet money, like 50 to 75 cents even, that this script started with no attachment to Cloverfield. But at some point, to kind of get some names, or I don't know what the reasons, you know, who can know the mind of Hollywood, you know? But I wouldn't be surprised at all if this script started out as having nothing to do with Cloverfield, and at some point someone along the way said, hey, why don't we attach this to Cloverfield? Maybe that'll help it somehow, you know? It feels like a small indie movie, but with a couple movie stars instead of just unknowns. The tension for much of the movie seems based on, you know, is he or isn't he crazy? You know, this girl and this guy that's roughly her age, probably like, you know, 20-somethings or maybe early 30s, like I couldn't tell. You know, they're both in this bunker with this guy who built the bunker. And kind of the question throughout the movie is this guy crazy? Okay, he's definitely weird. Is he crazy? Or if he is crazy, how crazy is he? You know what? And I feel like some of that tension is ruined, even if you've only seen a single teaser, because I think even in the teasers, it's like, okay, well, something jacked up is going on. It's clearly not just this guy's dreaming up this idea of what happened, you know? So something is going on upstairs, you know, above ground. But even knowing that her captor, which I put in quotes and add a question mark to, that's kind of a question that, you know, you can ponder and wonder about as you watch the movie, if you do. But even knowing that her captor is right about some kind of invasion, maybe sci-fi type thing going on outside their protective bunker, that doesn't take away from wondering if he might still be crazy in some other ways and how dangerous he may or may not really be. So I think that some of that tension is still intact. But other parts of it that I feel like the movie is trying to rely on a little bit, the, okay, is there something really going on outside or not, you know, is kind of spoiled just by the marketing. And I feel like they're probably in between a rock and a hard place, because if they didn't imply, like I said before, that there's some sci-fi element, you know, so that you could completely be wondering as you go into the movie, then I think when that does happen, people might be like, what is this? What are we watching? This is, I didn't really want to watch a sci-fi movie or whatever. So this is a hard one to market, which is another reason why I think why it reminds me of an indie movie, because a lot of indie movies like this one, or you know, all kinds of indie movies, they just don't fit in that. They're not easily marketed because they are just kind of outside the box, and they're just doing some different things that can't be expressed or can't prepare an audience for them in just a little, you know, trailer or marketing thingy. Okay, so let's talk about the cast a little bit. John Goodman plays Howard, the owner of the bunker, and the captor of Michelle, who is played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead. If you don't know her, she's was the love interest in Scott Pilgrim, and she was also in The Thing prequel. I've really begun to enjoy her as a performer. I haven't seen her do a lot of varied stuff, but I feel like what she does well is this kind of likable, vulnerable kind of female protagonist. And she's more snarky and stuff in Scott Pilgrim. And so what she was doing here was kind of similar to what kind of character she was playing and the emotions that she was playing in The Thing prequel. I've really enjoyed her in what I've seen her in so far. And so it was neat to watch her in this one. And then John Gallagher Jr., who I don't know from anything, he plays Emmett, which is another person that's just kind of stuck in the bunker with Michelle and the creepy Howard. I thought that all three gave really great performances, with certainly John Goodman, in my opinion, being the standout. His bursts of anger amidst long stretches of quiet awkwardness kept me wondering and kept me nervous about him for most of the movie. Stunts and visuals. Well, there's some CG in the sci-fi sequences, but I felt like it was masked well by blurred camera focus. Like it would be something going on in the background. And I like that, especially when, you know, you don't have a big budget for CG. And also just for me, I'm cursed with an eye that picks out CG pretty easily. So I actually like it when they kind of hide the details of the monster or the big thing or whatever's going on kind of in the background. That whole kind of hide the monster approach in movies with CG characters or monsters or whatever is I just like it. I just like it. It's it. I get taken out of the movie less because it's asking less of my suspension of disbelief. This is not a movie that's filled with stunts, effects, or action, though. It is a suspense drama, and if you expect eye candy, you're likely going to be disappointed. So, is there anything of moral, philosophical, spiritual relevance in this movie that might trigger some worthwhile thought or conversation? I don't think so, like, automatically. Maybe for some people. For me, I kind of had to think. I was like, well, what would be a theme that, you know, that maybe I would think about? So I did have to reach. I don't think it's going to come to people naturally. But the thought that came to my mind was, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater when in search of truth. You know, they're wondering through this whole movie, is Howard telling the truth? Is he crazy? Or is he just weird? You know, where do we draw that line? What is the truth about this guy? And how much is true of what he's telling us? And I think that's kind of like a really relevant thing for us to consider as we are listening to different voices in our lives, whether we're looking for, you know, advice about political issues, or whether we're looking at like some of the really big issues of like, is there a God? Or, you know, who is God? What is God like? You know, I mean, yes, there comes a point when someone's credibility is destroyed by their character, and then it's better to just look for a different source of information. You know, there's just some people that take a view that I've seen them use words loosely and in a sloppy manner, and it just comes to the point where I'm like, okay, I'm not discounting your view, but I want to find a different spokesperson for it because you just have lost credibility with me. I don't feel like you're really searching for truth yourself, just in the way that you're using words and making really broad statements and stuff, unsupported statements. And anyway, so I mean, certainly there's going to be situations like that, but I don't think we should assume that any given claim that exits the mouth of a discredited source is false. You know, like saying, well, such and such an atheist is arrogant and petty, so his view on the age of the earth can't be believed. Or this pastor slept with his secretary and embezzled his congregation, so his claim about the reliability of biblical manuscripts can't be believed. You know, if we want to pursue truth in every area of life, the challenge that we face is to keep digging and looking for information from the best available sources and a variety of them whenever possible, even if some people are taking opposing views who, you know, rub us the wrong way or who have just proven themselves to be an unreliable source. I think our duty is to say, okay, well, what about the argument itself? What about the claim itself? Let's get away from this guy. He's obviously not going to be helpful in my pursuit of truth on this issue. But you know, that doesn't mean that I should just say, well, this guy's a jerk or whatever. You know, I mean, if we do that, then we're going to find it all too easy to just allow our emotions to justify our decision to stop seeking out the truth and then just believe, you know, what we want to. Anyway, this movie is rated PG-13 for thematic material, including frightening sequences of threat with some violence and brief language. I have no idea what your tastes are, but if I was a time traveler, I'd go back in time and say, Pater, skip it. Skip it. If you want a suspense drama that's lacking geek fiction, just a normal, you know, everyday person suspense drama, there are likely better movies on your bucket list, or even some movies that you've seen already that you could go back to. If you want a suspense drama with a geek fiction backdrop, the geek elements are way too sparse here. So go enjoy some Battlestar again, or go watch an episode of The Walking Dead or something that has that geek setting backdrop just a little bit more commonly in the mix. Or take a chance on an indie sci-fi drama that you haven't seen. There's just not enough originality here to justify a lost evening for you. I want to remind you guys, go check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network. If you're only listening to this podcast, then you are missing out. We've got the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, and POSTOS, all great shows putting out great stuff. For more info about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com. Well, this week, after being curious for quite a while what kind of experience it was going to be, I got a chance to sit down and play Tom Clancy's The Division on PlayStation 4. You know, you may have heard that it's basically this always online type of game, but there were still some major questions in my mind about, like, could this game be played single player? Because I really, when I do, like, social gaming, I play board games, paper and pencil RPGs. You know, I don't even do, like, couch co-op, typically, as like a social gaming experience. For me, for whatever reason, when I sit down to play a video game, that is a solo experience for me. So I guess I should apologize in advance if you ever like become aware of the fact that like I'm on, you know, I'm playing, you know, on my Xbox 360. Not many of you would even, I guess, probably know what my username is. I don't even remember what my Paterboy, maybe. I can't remember. But I mean, if I like ignore friend requests or you see me playing and send a message and I don't respond and stuff like that, it's just because that's kind of off my radar. I usually turn notifications off, so I'm not even aware when someone's like trying to contact me or sent me a message. I'm just so uninterested in all the social components of video gaming. And for me, it really is just about me being alone in whatever world the creators of the game have prepared for me. So, but I mean, I really like RPGs because I suck at action games, and it's not very often that I get a chance to play in a modern, you know, military shooter type of setting. And this was looking like it was going to maybe be an opportunity for me to do that. You know, I've been playing like the Far Cry games, but those are, you know, so I can, you know, I play some games that use modern-ish weapons, you know, but those are like out in jungles and kind of like, you know, crazy wilderness places. And so I don't really get the chance to play like a in the city or, you know, whatever, in the, you know, kind of like a battlefield environment type of shooting game or whatever. But that's what this is. It's a third-person action RPG, and even though there is some hand-eye coordination required to kind of line up your shots, it would be similar in some ways to, like, say, maybe Fallout 4, where you do have to line up your shots and get them in, you know, your reticle. But there is, I think, some dice rolling going on behind the scenes as well. I'm not sure about that, but it seems like that may be the case. Anyway, I really just wanted to test out the single player potential of this game because so little has been said about it. I mean, people will say things that come close to really clarifying the issue, but not quite. You know, it's like, okay, it's always online. Okay, can I play it single player? Yes, you can play it single player. Okay, well, can I play it beginning to end single player, or is at some point, like many MMOs do, the difficulty going to ramp up, requiring me to recruit some friends in order to be able to finish the game? I want to know that, you know. Now, regarding that, in an article I read in PC Gamer recently, Ubisoft has really set out to create a viable single player experience from start to finish on this. And so at this point, I'm just kind of taking them at their word. I'm like, okay, you know, they've said that like the combat encounters, the difficulty all scales depending on the number of heroes or players, excuse me, that are in that, you know, mission. So I'm going to take them at their word and say, okay, so they have made an effort, you know, so that's how it's supposed to work. Fine. But now it's still always online. Does that mean that I have to have a PlayStation Plus subscription? Because I have no reason to have an Xbox Live Gold subscription or a PlayStation Plus experience subscription. Excuse me. Because, you know, I really don't care about the free games that they come out with every month, and you only get to keep those for as long as you keep your subscription dues paid. They evaporate as soon as you, you know, miss a month or whatever. And in the type of games I play are so narrow that I don't really have a reason to pay monthly for kind of a unpredictable potpourri of games. And, of course, I don't play multiplayer. So I have no reason to have any of those subscription services with either console. So I wanted to know, you know, am I going to have PlayStation Plus in order to play this online? Now, I can't speak for, like, what's going on with the Xbox, and I assume that on PC, as usual, you know, you can play with anybody online for free. My experience with this game is that you do not need a PlayStation Plus subscription, which was awesome. It was really cool. So those were my main concerns, and then after that, I was like, okay, now let's just see, now that we've got those boxes checked, is this a game I would enjoy? And I think so, but not as a $60 brand new single player experience. I wanted it to be, first of all, I would have loved for it to be more of an open world RPG type feel, but really the main focus on this is combat and looting, and the looting is okay, but you know, the loot that I've experienced so far is not that great. I don't feel like I am rapidly progressing and changing and becoming better. I mean, I guess incrementally I am, but I don't feel that change in the gameplay, you know? Like, I'm playing two worlds right now, and one thing that I'm beginning to appreciate is the lack of scaled combat in that game, because you can go into an environment and like, oh crap, I am not near strong enough for these guys. Or you can go into an environment and be like, oh crap, these guys are tough, you know? But then you come back a little later after you've leveled and gotten some new gear and stuff like that, and you notice a difference in your ability to do things. You know, in a single gameplay session of Two Worlds, I can... it's not uncommon in a single gameplay session of maybe just 2 or 3 hours for me to like notice, oh, I'm doing something a little bit better. I'm my stats have improved a little bit, and I'm feeling that in the gameplay. And I didn't feel that with The Division. Now, admittedly, I only spent about 1.5 to 2 hours in the game. So you know, that's maybe not a fair criticism yet. But I still would have loved to seen more growth in my character experience. I also wish I would have seen more potential for growth. Now, there were a few tabs, and I didn't mention this in my video on the YouTube channel, which, by the way, if you want to watch me really suck at a game and just getting freaked out and like stressed out and stuff, if you enjoy seeing me or anybody else in that kind of state while they're gaming, then you can go check out my my video, trial and error video of The Division, because it definitely got pretty intense for me. And I express many of these same thoughts in that video as well. But anyway, oh crap, what was I saying? Oh, dang it. Oh yeah, okay. So maybe it's not a fair criticism for me to talk about like the leveling, but I did notice that the main skills tab, there's three tabs in there, like one's for skills, one's for like something else, and one's for perks. And the one for something else and the one for perks were locked. I couldn't get access to those. And so I couldn't really, I don't think I could even like see what was in those tabs to look at, but you certainly couldn't upgrade any of the trees that were in those tabs. If there were trees there, I didn't see. But like the skills section, it's all combat related. And I've heard that there is crafting, but I haven't run into any crafting components yet. And I guess when I am playing a game, you know, like say an open world game, like, you know, Skyrim or Two Worlds or something like that, or Fallout, I expect even in the early missions to be running into crafting components and elements of the full game, so I can get a sense of what this thing is. Maybe that, you know, they were just not giving me any crafting components at the beginning there, but I just didn't feel like there just wasn't a hook. And so I guess what I'm saying is, whether or not this game does branch out and get more fascinating and layered and stuff later on in the game, which from just the few videos that I've watched of other people's reviews of having played the game much longer than I have, you know, the consensus seems to be, yeah, there's not a whole lot to this game. I'm kind of taking their word for it, but I didn't watch those reviews until after, you know, I made my own video and made up my own mind. But I just didn't feel like there was a hook in terms of the world, because the world is beautiful, but there's not a whole lot to interact with in the world as compared to other open world games. I was going to say other. That's because I was kind of wanting this to be an open world game, but it's really not. And there's not a real story that was able to hook me. You know, I feel like in these post-apocalyptic worlds, there's such great potential for story. I sense that Bethesda realized that with Fallout 4, because at least they tried to kind of give you an emotional hook at the beginning that you could invest in. Of course, that went totally off the rails, and you decide to make a bunch of beds and houses instead of going to look for your son. Whatever. but there's no, like, personal hook. In the introduction, you are just one of many kind of sleeper agents, part of this organization called the Division, that become activated when the world goes to crap. And so you just immediately leave whatever you're doing and you go and you join this elite squad to try and rebuild after the apocalypse has begun, you know. And that's it. There's not really an emotional, personal hook to invest me in the story. And story usually isn't important to me, but it is a little bit more important when there's not a lot in the world to interact with, you know, and to be a part of. So I really felt like, you know, on both levels, this thing was kind of failing me it's a decent looter, but it's not that great. And it doesn't have a lot of systems that it gave me the chance to see or play with. And it doesn't have like a story that feels like a personal hook for me that motivates me to go and do another mission.
mission. The missions are basically like, boy, yeah, things sure are crappy. Hey, we could use your help over here. Hey, good job with that. Things are still pretty crappy. Hey, we could use your help over here, you know? So in that regard, it feels very much like an MMO. And in my opinion, that's what this game is. It is an MMO that you can absolutely play single player and that you can probably play with little to no interaction with any other players. The only time I was aware of other users being in existence was when I went to the safe house, the place where you can buy weapons and get your next mission or whatever. I see, a bunch of people running around with, names like Monkey Dookie 58 or whatever the crap their name is, which, again, takes me out of the roleplay experience. I'm like, okay, these are obviously players. I'm totally aware that I'm in an MMO. Not to mention the fact that my player name, my character name, is my Ubisoft Uplay username account. They force you to make an account with Ubisoft, their Uplay program or whatever, and whatever username you pick for that, in my case it was Paterboy, because that's a very commonly what I'll pick for my username for various things, that's my character name, And I'm looking around, I'm seeing other things, Blizdiggle _539, I'm like, what the crap, Get me out of this safe house so I can try to feel like I'm in a world, So that was just kind of annoying. But once you leave the safe house and go out into the world, I didn't see any other players. As soon as I stepped out of the safe house, it was just me in this world. And you'll have like bots that will be your allies and help you, with little missions here and there. And they're just like other members of the division, just nameless, faceless, members of the division. I don't know. There just wasn't a lot to really grab me in this game, which is kind of a bummer. It's a game that I think that I could come back to when I don't have any better games to play, kind of like a filler game. Like this game, it's very possible I would come back to it, at some point when I can get it for $15 or $20 in a bargain bin somewhere or on Amazon or something, and just kind of give me some missions and stuff to do to kill some time while I'm waiting for the release that I really care about coming up, it's such a bummer because especially in these, as I kind of was about to get to before, in these post-apocalyptic themed games, maybe especially in RPGs, but probably just games in general, I think there's a lot of great potential to kind of deal with some real human issues, deal with depression or despair or fear or insecurity. I mean, there's so many great, springboards for very human emotional types of topics and stories. And stuff that, could be useful springboards, as I always appreciate. Oh, there's my phone. I got to go review the movie that you've probably already heard the review for at this point. but those kinds of things can be useful springboards, either for conversation or just for our own personal thought about like how would I deal with this kind of environment? Even though we're not likely to, we're all likely to deal with increasing amounts of suffering and build up a catalog of pain over the course of our lives. And I think there's potential when we interact with stories and settings that are dealing with pain, even if they're in a kind of a fantastical environment, to kind of give us an excuse to kind of reflect on, where's Jesus in this? Is anybody looking to Jesus? And they probably aren't, but it's still kind of a springboard where I can say, what would I do in that scenario? Where is my faith at? Can I really say that I would look to Jesus in this? Well, I mean, we can't ultimately know until we arrive at that point, but I mean, I think those are worthwhile things to think about, So I just appreciate substance, thematic substance, because I think it can do more than just make for an enjoyable video game experience. I think there's potential, of course, for it to bring reflection and purpose and just kind of thought, worthwhile thought, for ourselves and for the life we're living and walking with Christ in. So anyway, blah 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 blah. That's a lot of that and a whole lot of nothing. I need to go and watch 10 Cloverfield Lane so I can travel back in time and give you my thoughts on it. Bye.
Data collection complete. Activating MusicNet 1.0.
Just a couple quick things to remind you guys about. First off, youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral is where you can go to get the video versions of the content, the main content presented on this show each week, as well as some alternate content. For example, my video, Can You Play the Division Single Player, went up this week, and that's entirely different content. I mean, I some of the bullet points are the same, some of the thoughts that I had are the same, but I mean, in that video, you actually get to see me play the Division and play it really, really terribly, and... I actually had a lot of fun, despite at the end of the day not being thrilled with the game. The experience of playing it and figuring things out for the first time was stressful in some fun ways. So anyway, if you know, want some fun at my expense, be sure to check out that video. And also, if you want like the full-blown like visual Peter Franzen experience, you can of my 10 Cloverfield Lane review, excuse me, got to differentiate there, then you can see that also at Christian Geek Central on youtube.com. And then while you're there, if you would like, share, and subscribe if you like those videos and want to share them and want more videos like them. And that also just helps get people connected to Christian Geek Central. It's really cool. Just passed 300 subscribers on that channel not long ago. That was very, very exciting. So that might be even more than people than are subscribed to the podcast. Now, I don't get that many views per video. It's just people. That's the number of people that like, yeah, let me know when you're putting something out. And, you know, most times, I guess they don't watch it. I don't know why we subscribe. I guess I've subscribed to a few places that, you know, I just kind of see what the video is. But anyway, just the fact that's a really cool thing that people just want to stay connected to what's being put out by the channel every week. So, anyway, I also want to bring up our spring Agape Geek Out community event that I'm trying to recruit and excite you guys about right now. It's coming in April. This time we're raising funds and awareness for the orphan/adoption ministry of Show Hope. That's a ministry that was started by Stephen Curtis Chapman and Mary Beth Chapman, his wife. And it's just about helping orphans find homes that they can live in, and the ones that, you know, that aren't in homes in the meantime, just being properly cared for. You know, God has a heart for orphans and for adoption. Deuteronomy repeatedly commands Israel to care for the fatherless. James tells us to look after orphans in James 1:27. God himself has adopted all non-Jewish believers into his family. We see that in Romans 8:15, and the adoption idea is carried over elsewhere in the New Testament. So my hope is that you'll look at your April calendar and schedule an event, small or large. You know, this could be, you know, just a couple of friends over, or it could be something bigger at your home or at your church, you know. So just a little thing or a big thing where you can invite those in your life to enjoy something that you enjoy, you know, some nerdy thing maybe, you know, like a movie night or video game night or a board game night or whatever, or just your usual gaming group night. Just say, hey, yeah, we do this every month, but hey, this month, everybody want to bring like a couple bucks for Show Hope. That would be really cool if we could just do that this one time that we meet, you know. So, you know, it can be something that's already part of your pattern, or something that you want to inject into your pattern and create a special event out of. But anyway, it's just something, a way you can invite those in your life again to enjoy what you enjoy while also helping you to participate in what God is calling us to do. You know, this is one of the reasons that I really like the idea of doing these Agape Geek Outs. Is speaking for myself, and I don't think I'm alone in this, but speaking for myself, it is hard as a geek to think outside of myself. Almost by definition, being a geek is about like this inward focus, or this focus on something, some hobby, usually not a person. Now, sometimes it is. Sometimes, you know, it's like role-playing games or board games, something like that, that does involve other people. But even in those cases, sometimes people can just be a means to an end. We just want to experience that game. And yeah, people are, you know, have to be a part of the package that way, you know. So there's so much about being a geek that lends itself to a very like self-focused type of life. And so I just want to provide opportunities for myself, and then also invite you guys to be a part of those with me, where we can just in baby steps, you know, learn a little bit more to think a little bit more frequently outside of ourselves. And so this is like, these are really easy baby steps, I think. You know, it's like, hey, we get to geek out and do something. It's not like we're going and like, you know, repairing somebody's house and picking all the weeds in their yard or something like that. And those are awesome things that I am terrible at volunteering for, you know. But something like this is something that we can do in our weakness, a little baby step that we can take in our selfish weakness to engage a little bit more than we would have otherwise with what God is calling us to do. So I hope you'll consider looking at your April calendar and scheduling something that you can dedicate to this this effort, this what I hope will be a community effort on behalf of showhope.com. showhope.org, which is, of course, where you can go to get more information about Show Hope, showhope.org. Also, guys, I want your voice and your interest to be a part of this podcast. I always want that, and part of Christian Geek Central as well. So whether you've got an idea for something already or you just want to be a part of the fun somehow, but you don't know what that might look like, well, I want to find a way to plug you in and let your voice be heard. And it's also a great way to promote what you're doing if you like. So for more info, go ahead and email me anytime, paeter@spiritblade.com. Feedback. Give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? What's on your mind you'd like a... But dang it. What should we keep? What should we change? What's on your mind? I should just rewrite the script. Because I think I said, what's on your mind again, didn't I? You can play that back if you really want to. I don't care. What's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? I need to rewrite that. I got to rewrite that. I should make a note for myself, but I'm not going to. We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can. We got to hear from you to do that. So send me an email or an audio file that's recorded on your phone. That might be an easy way to do it. And you can get yourself on this podcast. Send it to paeter@spiritblade.com. All right, well, stay tuned for DS9 Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 400 if you want to start from the beginning. Next week, if God wants it to happen, I will share my Midnight Special review, which is the dude that was Zod. Oddly enough, this will be just a week before he appears as a corpse in Batman vs. Superman. He's going to be a living person, as far as I know, in this strange sci-fi drama type thing. But oddly enough, I think it's going to have a whole lot more sci-fi than the sci-fi drama that I watched this week. So the trailer just really has me interested in what this thing is. So Midnight Special, that's coming out next week, so hopefully I'll have my thoughts for you on that. Till then, check out SpiritBlade.com and Christian Geek Central for more stuff made just for you. Thank you guys so much for making time for this show. I really do appreciate just you guys like being interested enough to tune in, and hopefully this show is useful to you guys. It was neat to hit that 400 and pass that 400 mark, and to just kind of think about, wow, I mean, this all these people that like listen to this show and they don't know me, but it's become a part of their routine. And that's really cool to just have the opportunity to hopefully be useful to that many people and for this length of time. Tomorrow is promised to no man, you know, and I have no reason to think that I won't be doing this until I'm dead, but maybe I'll die tomorrow, you know. So I've just been thinking back a little bit and just appreciating you guys. So thank you very much for making time for the show, as I always say. I do hope you guys have a great week, that God does something and maybe marks a moment in your life that you can look back on in the future and say, yeah, God was doing something there, and he was lovingly changing me, stretching me, or blessing me, or caring for me in my weakness. So I hope you have a moment like that this week, or just a sense and an awareness, more than a sense, but like a specific awareness of what God is directing you to do this week. And then I hope also, of course, that you join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast as we all together continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Frampton with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
Something's coming through the wormhole.
The Dominion has endured for 2,000 years and will continue to endure long after the Federation has crumbled into dust.
No!
5 years ago, no one had ever heard of Bajor or Deep Space Nine, and now all our hopes rest here.
Okay, well, I just finished watching the second episode of Deep Space Nine, the first actual normal episode that wasn't a pilot, past prologue. This was a very interesting introduction to Deep Space Nine beyond the initial premise of the show. This was all about Kira. Specifically, Kira meets one of her old underground rebellion associates. And even though the war has been stopped for a while and Bajor is free, he is still fighting. He's part of a secret underground still militant group called the Khon Ma, sort of like ISIS today. And they're still committing terrorist acts, and he's all for them. He comes on board, and he requests sanctuary. And so at first they protect him from the Cardassians. And he and Kira start talking, and basically it becomes a debate about, is she working with the Federation, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Is her loyalty no longer truly to Bajor? Is it only to a bunch of spineless stooges who want to sell it to the Federation? Or is working with the Federation a good thing for Bajor? But like I say, it's not really so much about is the Federation good or bad, because being Star Trek, we're supposed to automatically assume the Federation is good. It's more a matter of, how do I put this exactly? It's more a matter of where her loyalties truly lie. And as I said before, one of the good things about this show is people are allowed to not like each other. I mean, heck, Kira is the first officer of this station. She's the equivalent of Riker or Spock, and she openly detests the Federation. She actually wants them out of the system. And that's going to stay around for a while. That's not just going to go away instantly. We save that kind of stuff for Voyager. And I really like that. Things will change, obviously. If you watch the show later on, you'll see Kira's one of the group. But she grows into that. And she brings her own unique perspective, which is an outsider of the Federation. Also, this is very interesting. This is the first political show of Deep Space Nine. And politics, I'll admit, when I first started watching the show in my teenage years, these kind of episodes really bored the snot out of me. I want to see action, or I want to see at least weird aliens, or something funny, or something. Now, these are usually some of my favorite episodes, with the complicated who's on whose side, what's going on here, what's really happening. We get introduced to Garak for the first time, and whenever Garak's involved, things are going to get interesting and political. He is the only Cardassian still on the station, and no one actually knows why he's there. The rumor is that he's either a spy who's been left by the Cardassians, or he's an enemy of the Cardassian state, and being here is the only place he could be safe. Or somewhere in between. No one knows. And Garak lies constantly, so you can never... excuse me. You can never trust what he has to say about that. And if you're watching the show and you've never seen Garak before, he comes off kind of slimy. That's on purpose, but trust me, Garak really is one of the shining moments of an excellent show. And I really liked all the political intrigue. I liked that there were several factions. We also got a visit from the Duras sisters, if you've been watching Next Generation, the enemies of Worf who keep popping up. Of course, they're not that interesting because they're just filling the role. They're just the criminals that are meeting with the rebels and... they could have been anyone. They only made them the Duras sisters because they want to make some links to the Next Generation to get some fans coming over when this early point in the show. It didn't hurt being the Duras sisters, it just didn't make a difference. They didn't bring any special insight or Klingon quality to them. They just walked around all looking tough and, you know, it could have been anyone. Surprised that Quark was not involved in this episode at all. You know, you talk about shady underground dealings and trade and all that kind of thing, and surprised that he at least wasn't there to be accused of things. But yeah, all in all, this is a pretty good episode. It's a slow paced one as far as action. The only action's at the end, and it's pretty mild. It's just some scuffling. Really, this is a character piece, and it's all about Kira. And I like that Kira is flawed. Kira's, you know, everyone's flawed in this. Although Sisko comes off pretty, he knows what he's talking about most of the time. One of the really good things about this episode is that there are some things that it never just outright says. There are some conclusions that the characters draw that you see them draw the conclusion and move on from it. They don't have to sit there and explain everything to the character completely, therefore explaining it to the audience. This show respects its audience and expects that they can follow along with certain unspoken things. That made it hard for me as a teenager. Now I appreciate it. Obviously, this is nowhere near as dark and intense and complex as something like, say, Game of Thrones, but for Star Trek, this is like that. Well, that's all I have to say about this episode. It's a moderate episode. You know, you don't need to watch it. It's not a must-see, but it's a good one. It helps you understand a lot of the factors. We get to know Garak. We see what Kira's going on there, and really, Kira and Sisko represent a lot of the whole Federation, anti-Federation sentiment about Bajor at large. so they make for a good microcosm of the larger state situation, as well as the whole question of who's on whose side. So, that being said, we'll see you next time for the next episode, A Man Alone.